Krishna, what you have told us so far in chapter 14 is very disheartening. I am depressed, I am discouraged. So Krishna says, why? You know, what have I told you? So we say, well, you know, you told us from verse 1 to verse 18 that we have these three gunas, sattva, rajas and tamas, and we are born with them and they go with us throughout life. And we are bound. All these gunas bind us. We seem like there is no escape. When I'm in rajas, I'm out working, I go early in the morning, I have to go to work, I have so much to do. 6-7 o'clock in the morning, I'm rushing out, and I come home 8-9 o'clock at night. I'm so tired, you know, I work so hard, nobody helps me, nobody appreciates what I do, even my wife does not appreciate me. And the wife is smiling because she said, I have been telling this guy, you know, don't work so hard. But she doesn't say anything because it's no use. You know, he goes to sleep exhausted, wakes up in the morning, again he rushes off to work, and all day he's just slogging, killing himself, taking on more work than he can handle, complaining, but cannot give up work. He's bound by his rajas. Rajas does not let him go. If I don't do it, there is no one else in the company who can do it. I'm the only, you know, those kind of attitude, and that binds him. Sat tamasik, of course, you know, he's bound all the time. You know, he goes to work, doesn't do anything, just sits there like a piece of furniture, takes a lot of breaks, maybe smokes in the middle, and gets fired from one job, second job, third job, finally ends up on welfare, and maybe in a soup kitchen somewhere, homeless, taking drugs, and, you know, ends up in jail. And he's bound. He cannot get out of his tamas because that is has become his overwhelming nature. It's not somebody else created him with tamas. He himself is born with those tendencies from previous birth. And in this birth, he does nothing to fix it. He doesn't do anything to make himself better. Just goes downhill, gets worse and worse. Say, okay, but you didn't you tell us that sattva is good? You know, we should all stay in sattva. Yes, that's very good. From tamas, we should go to rajas. We should go to sattva. But then should we just stay in sattva? Well, that is good, but sattva is also a guna. Guna means a rope. Guna means qualities of the mind. That's one meaning, but guna also means a rope. So just as tamas is a rope, rajas is a rope, sattva is also a rope. Okay, then what am I supposed to do? Am I not supposed to stay in sattva? And how can sattva become bondage? You say sattva is knowledge, it is purity. It is, you know, when you are in prayer, when you are in meditation, you are in sattva, then how can that bind us? Krishna in the earlier chapter verses had said that through attachment to knowledge and purity, it can bind you. When you get so attached to that state that I always have to be in that sattvic state, and if I'm away from it, I feel that I am losing something, I'm missing something, and I become miserable. I get attached even to that joy of sattva, like a lady, you know, every morning she gets up and prays or meditates. And she's very, you know, very peaceful. Her day starts very well. But then one day in the middle of the prayers, the husband says, come on, you know, I need my breakfast. I have to go to work early. And the child is crying. I'm late for school. And so she has to leave her prayers halfway. And then she gets her husband ready and the child ready. And then the whole day she is miserable. You know, oh, you know, how such a sinner I am. I left my prayers halfway. And then she's unhappy. Then you are attached to that sattva. Yes, we're not saying that every day you should use an excuse to not finish your prayers, but one day if it happened, I could not meditate, or one day I could not do. But I did it because of my duty. I had my duty to my husband, to my child, or my child was sick. Then at that stage, you should be able to be beyond it and say, okay, you know, that's all right. I couldn't do it, but there was a particular reason. So when a person gets attached to sattva and says that without sattva, being in sattvic mood, I'm all the time miserable, then that also becomes a rope. So then all three are ropes. Tamas is a rope, rajas is a rope, sattva. Then how am I to get free? is there any freedom, or is my life condemned to just suffer? You know, this whole life I'll go through once, sometime in Satama, sometime in Rajas, once in a while by mistake in Sattva, and then I'll die and that's it. So Krishna says, no, don't be discouraged, my son. We have a solution. And that's the beauty of this, the Bhagavad Gita. As you study it more and more, you will realize that it's so logical, so systematic, so beautifully it has been laid out. What Krishna does is first gives us the problem, gives us the symptoms and signs of the problem, like gunas, okay. Then he, when the student says, is there a solution? Yes, he gives us the solution. And not only that, but he also tells us what will happen if you follow it and what will happen if you don't follow the advice. So it's very, very scientific explanation. So today we shall get the solution. That these two verses are most beautiful. I keep saying that. But honestly, these two verses, last night when I was reading, my hair was standing on end. It's so beautiful. So wonderfully, Swami Chinmayananda and his commentary has explained it. That I think that's why I would encourage everybody to have these green books and read them before you come, because then you can be prepared, or you can read them after you leave the class so that it can summarize. So this is what we shall do today, verse number 19. Nanyam gunebhya kartaram yada drashtanupashyati gunebhyascha param veti madbhavam sodhigacchati. So gunebhya, in the first line, gunebhya, except for the gunas, na anyam, nothing else, kartaram. Kartaram means the doer. So what happens, aside from the gunas, there is no other doer, no other karta. Yada, when drashta, this seer, this witnessing individual, anupashyati, pashyati means see. Anu is a very beautiful prefix. Actually, when I was reading the meaning of anu in the Sanskrit, it is like, you know, 35 meanings. So you have to figure it out which one is what Krishna means. When they use anu with the verb as a prefix, it means day by day, continuously. So when an individual continuously, constantly, every day perceives the witness, the seer, and the gunas. And the gunas are working and there is a witness seer. Then what happens to such an individual? Gunebhya, beyond the gunas, param veti. He goes beyond, higher than the gunas. Veti means he comes to know the truth that is beyond the gunas. And then what happens? Then Krishna says, mad bhavam saha adhi gacchati. Mad bhavam, to me, Krishna says, to me, saha, that individual, adhi gacchati, attains, reaches, or comes to my being. So, what are the gunas? As we have said, gunas are not only ropes, but they are also moods of the mind. My mind can be either in tamas, rajas, or sattva at any given moment. But where do they originate from? They originate from the causal body. So BMI chart was made by Swami Chinmayananda. And he says, the body, we all have the human body. With the human body, I become a perceiver of objects. It means I see, hear, smell, taste, and touch all the objects with my body. With the mind, I become a feeler of emotions. Emotions like joy, sorrow, anger, hatred, and so on. And the intellect is the capacity which decides, which determines, which judges. And with the intellect, I become a thinker of thoughts. So the intellect decides, the mind feels, and the body acts. And the vasanas are my tendencies or desires that I was born with and which in this lifetime I either add or subtract. I strengthen certain vasanas, my desires, like an alcoholic drinks, a sportsman plays, a spiritual person prays. Why do they do that? Because of the vasanas or the tendencies. These are my desires which I was born with, which are unmanifest and then which become stronger or become weaker depending on which one I feed. And so these are the vasanas. And then Om represents God's presence as life, as consciousness. Om is that reality which is all pervading everywhere in the universe and is in all of us as life. Is not only in us, but outside us. It's here between us too. So Om is that consciousness, Brahman, that totality. So this is called the gross body. The gross body means that which I can see. I can see this body. I can see your body. You can see mine. The mind and intellect are called the subtle body. Subtle means that I cannot see. Like I cannot see your mind and intellect. Like you might be thinking, it's a boring talk. When will it end? I can't see that. So if you do, please keep it to yourself. Don't tell the others. So the mind and intellect are subtle, but you are aware of your own mind and intellect, while I am not. So the mind and intellect is called the subtle body, and then we are the vasanas. Vasanas are called the causal body, the causal body, C-A-U-S-A-L. And why is it called the causal body? Because the vasanas, they cause me to act, number one. And also, they also determine the type of body I will get, which we will talk in the next shloka. So it is the causal body. So desires in the, or the tendencies in the vasanas, in the causal body, create desires and thoughts. Desires and thoughts in the mind and intellect. And then finally, create action at the body level. So if I have a selfish tendency, then it creates selfish thoughts, desires and selfish actions. If I have a pure, compassionate nature, then my desires, my thoughts are all pure and compassionate. My actions are. So this causes me to act. So the goal of spirituality is to substitute negative tendencies with positive tendencies, where there is anger, let me sow love and all, you know, like in the prayer of Saint Francis. So this is the vasanas are the causal body. They are the tendencies and the gunas also represent. So when I have a sattvic tendency, then I will have sattvic thoughts, sattvic actions, rajasic and tamasic and so on. And so the quality of the actions is determined by my thoughts, by my desires. And so that is the relationship of the vasanas to the agunas to, and that's why they say that as far as possible, move from tamas to rajas and from rajas to sattva and stay as much as possible in sattva. So it is very important for us to know the state of our mind. Most of us, you know, have no idea. I'm just going through life mechanically and we have no idea about that there is something called sattva and rajas. And my mind is supposed to be in this or what am I? We have absolutely no idea. Until, at least I didn't, till I met Gurudev, until I read this, I had absolutely no idea. A few years back, if somebody had said, you know, you need to know the state of your mind, I would have said, what? You know, because I never knew that there is something called me and the mind are two separate things. And we don't know that, but when you start meditating, when I met Acharyas like Swami Ishwarananda and Guruji and all those people, then you slowly come to realize that there is a being other than me, other than the mind, other than the body, other than the mind, other than the intellect, which is the Om, the consciousness, and that is what we need to be aware of. So a wise person is constantly aware of a state of a mind, just like an experienced driver, like there's an ignorant driver, he just learns to drive. And he keeps on driving, you know, he just goes fast, same speed. And if the engine is making some funny noise, he has no idea. He doesn't know. But a experienced driver says, wait a minute, you know, your engine is not making good sound. You know, you need to stop and open the bonnet and check it. He says, what sound? I don't hear any sound. No. A wise person can tell, an experienced engineer or a driver. So similarly, a wise person all the time knows the state of his or her mind and is aware, and is, that's what they say, one of the very, very profound spiritual practices, that become a witness of your mind, constantly watch your mind. Like right now, you know, hopefully our mind is in sattva because we are hearing the Lord's words and our mind. And then when you go out and work and then you are in rajas and then at night you're tired, you are in tamas, it is okay. But say in the middle of the day when I'm supposed to work at job, I go into tamas, you know, I start becoming sleepy, then that's not right. You know, then you need to take care of the situation. So constantly be aware of your mind. And even when you're working, they say, well, I have to work in rajas. Yes, you have to work in rajas, but the rajas has to be combined with sattva. I have to have pure thoughts when I'm working, no matter what job I'm doing, whether I'm sweeping the floor, or whether I'm doing the dishes, or whether I'm seeing patients, or whether I'm a teacher teaching, or whether I'm working in an industry or an office. I have to constantly remember that the Lord has placed me here, and whatever station I have been placed is perfect for me to grow, for me to evolve. And He knows what is good for me. And so the, here I am, I work as the Lord's agent, I work as the Lord's servant without I and my, without ego. And when you do that, then does not matter what job you're doing, you could be sweeping the gutters. That also becomes a sattvic activity. There is nothing wrong in any activity. The problem is with the attitude. That's what Mahatma Gandhi also taught us, that any action can become pure when it is done with the right attitude. So that's what they're saying, that always, as far as possible, stay in sattva. And one very essential aspect of sattva is forgiveness. Say somebody cheated you, you know, and for 10 years you hold that grudge against him. And, you know, I'm going to take him to the court, and then you sue him, and then you go to court, and he goes to court, and for 10 years you are unhappy and miserable. You are miserable, he is miserable. Just forgive him. Forgive him? He took all that money from me? Yes, forgive him. No. If I keep forgiving, then how will... Don't worry, his karmas, there is a karma data, he will take care of it. Or if he has cheated you, somebody else will come and cheat him. So the karmas will be balanced. You don't need to worry. But then how about all the cheaters in the world will start growing? Okay, Swamiji says, okay, in that case, you make it your job. I'm going to remove all the cheaters in the world. Spend your whole life in rajas, fighting, hurting. Just forgive him and say it's okay. That money was not mine. Maybe I owed him from a previous life. Mera hisab chukta ho gaya. My debt is given. I'm fine. And what you will see that when you forgive, it will give you a lot of, and it could be money, it could be some hurt, you know, somebody said something 5 years ago. How could she ever say that? You know, we hold on to things like that. Some little insult, some little grudge, some little problem, somebody did something. Just forgive and forget. And what will happen is that, A, you will get peace of mind, but not only that, that individual, when he does not get a reaction from the action, the negative, and he finds you are responding with peace and silence, after 10 years, he himself will come and apologize. You know, I'm so sorry, I said this, you know, I did this to you, and you said, it's okay, you don't need to apologize. I forgave you 10 years ago. He'll say, you did? That's what Jesus did. That's what all these saints do, that no matter what problems come, in their mind, they are not disturbed because they are always in the sattvic state. They're always happy. They're always peaceful. They're always calm. And no matter what problems the world throws at them, look at Mirabai, look at Tukaram, look at Sant Gyaneshwar. Sant Gyaneshwar, his whole family was tortured constantly. But he never got out of his, you know, his state of purity. So that's what they say, that be aware that the gunas are working. See, nanya gunebhya kartaram. Aside from the gunas alone are working. And who is the seer? Drashta anupashyati, the one who constantly sees the seer. Who is the seer? Who is this drashta? Drashta means witness or seer. There is a very beautiful text. Neeru has some copies in the office. It's one of the most very simple text and very beautifully explained. It's by Shankaracharya, Bhagavan Shankaracharya. It's called Drig Drishya Vivek. And in that, he so beautifully explains the relationship between the seer and the seen. Driga Drishya. Drishya means seen, and Drig means the seer. Vivek means the distinction between the seer and the seen. So he starts that text by saying that objects are the seen and the eye is the seer, like if I see a rose. So the rose is seen and the eye is the seer of the rose. Now the rose could be red, it could be yellow, it could be, you know, pink, it could be orange. Different colors of the roses, my eyes don't change color. My eye does not become red with a red rose and yellow with a yellow rose. No, my eye remains the same. The rose may be varying, and the different variety of roses I see, different variety of people I see, but my eye is the seer and the rose is the seen. The other thing is the seen can never become the seer. That means the rose cannot see my eyes. Rose cannot say, oh, this person is looking at me, so let me now look very beautiful and let me give more fragrance. No, the rose is unaware that I am this. So the rose cannot see the eyes. But is the eye the ultimate seer? No, the eye is not the ultimate seer. Who knows the condition of the eyes? The mind. The mind and the intellect, the thoughts, no. Like my eyes, I am getting old now, I'm getting a cataract. So my eyes are becoming blurry, or I have, you know, my number is, myopia has increased, so I need to change my glasses, I need to go to the optometrist. So the condition of the eye is known to the mind and intellect. So the mind, the thinking capacity knows the condition of the mind. So the eye is the seen, the mind and intellect is the seer. Can the eye now know the condition of the mind and intellect? No. The eye cannot say, oh, this person is happy, this person is unhappy. The eyes can see outside, but the mind and intellect can see the eyes. Now, is the mind and intellect the ultimate seer, the ego? They say, no. Beyond that is Om, I, that true seer. Because I am aware of the state of my mind and intellect. Though usually we say, oh, I am the body, I am the mind, I am the intellect. I am this body. That's, we have been conditioned ever since we were a protozoa. We have been learned to think that I am this body. But when you study the scriptures, then they tell you that you are this consciousness, because what I own, I am not. Like I own this watch. So I say, this is my watch. So am I the watch? No. My car, this is my car. Am I the car? No. My house, am I the house? No. So if I am not my house, if I am not my car, if I am not my watch, then when I say my body, don't you say my body is hurting? So when I say my body, then I am automatically not the body. Then I say my mind is very upset, you know, somebody said something, or my husband didn't smile at me very well today. So my mind is upset. So the moment I say my mind, that means I am not the mind. I am the owner of the mind. And same way, my intellect, you know, I'm so confused. I don't understand. My intellect is confused. The moment I say that, that means I am the owner of. So the one that is the owner of the body, the mind, and the intellect is the consciousness, that Brahman, the life principle, and it illumines. It is because of the presence of this consciousness that at this moment I am speaking, you are all listening, the emotions are going through our mind, you know, likes and dislikes. I like this talk, I don't like this talk. And then understanding, I understand or I don't understand, you know, what he's saying, you know, it sounds like nonsense. So what I am seeing, what I am feeling, what I am thinking is all illumined by the consciousness. If this consciousness was not there at this moment, then I would be lying flat and, you know, you would have to carry me to the nearest cemetery. But it is because of this consciousness that at this moment we are all acting, we are all working. So it is the illumining consciousness, and that is what we have to be aware of. The example they give is like a river. Like say, you know, the Kern River, when it is full and coming real fast up, you know, down the mountains. Now, if you step from the rocks into the river, what's going to happen? You're going to be swept. And as we have, unfortunately, every year some youngsters die, a few, because foolishly they get into the river. when they are not well equipped, not well trained, and they get hurt and die. So the river, either you can be in the river and swept along, or you say, you have a friend who is visiting from New York, you say, come on, I'll show you the Kern River. So you go along the 178, you park there, and you stand on the banks of the river on the rocks, and you watch the beautiful flow of water, and you can enjoy the water. You say, wow, you know, it's so beautiful. The water is coming down the rocks and the mountains and the scenery. If you're standing on one side, you can observe the flow of the river without getting caught up in it, without getting affected by it. So similarly, in meditation, we are taught that the mind is a flow of thoughts just as a river is a flow of water. Now the mind, you can be either caught up in the mind. The mind, you know, oh, my mind is so upset, I am so disturbed, and then I get so stressed out, and then I, you know, take a Valium or go see a psychiatrist or take a gun and shoot myself or shoot somebody. Why do these people do that? Because they are caught in the river of the mind. And the mind is so powerful that they... But if they are taught through meditation, through right understanding, to distance themselves from the mind and watch the mind and say, okay, today my mind is upset because things are not going well. Today my mind is calm because it is going well. So just as a wise person can see the river flowing smoothly one day and another day very turbulent when there's a lot of water and he's unaffected, so similarly, a wise person standing on the banks of his mind can watch the flow of mind and enjoy it. Okay, today the mind is unhappy. All right, let it be. Yeah, if there is unhappy, if I can fix it, I fix it. Otherwise, I say it's okay. That's the nature of the mind. And I am not the mind. So it's okay. Today the mind is unhappy. Tomorrow will be happy. Today it's happy. Tomorrow for sure it will be unhappy. Because that is the nature of the world. Nobody ever gets continuous joy or continuous sorrow. Sorrow, joy, just as waves go up and down. So one who can watch the seer, drashta, anupashyati. Anu means constantly, daily, all the time. Be a witness of the mind. And that's why we always encourage people to learn how to meditate. In fact, I have a DVD that Tony made. This is a talk, about a 30-minute talk on meditation. What is meditation? Why, when, where, how? You can buy that. It's $5. Not only that, but I have done a couple of guided meditations, 10 and 20-minute meditations. So you can play them in your room and meditate with it. So as you meditate, what will happen is that you will slowly become a witness of the mind. And in meditation, we teach how to watch the mind. In fact, we have classes every Thursday night. You're welcome to join us at 6:30, and which we have been doing for more than 10 years now. So as you practice meditation, you slowly become a witness of the mind. You slowly distance yourself, and then you say, gunas are working. Guna guneshu vartante yat matva na anushajyate. Sri Krishna says in the Gita, he says, gunas keep on working. And wise person, knowing that, does not get disturbed. He says, yes, my body and mind and intellect will work according to their nature. And let it work. Because the body, the mind and intellect is always changing, always fluctuating. If I get involved in it, then I'm like in that river. I'm lost. But one who stays as a witness reaches me. Who is me? Here Krishna says me. Krishna represents the Lord, the consciousness, the total Brahman. For a Ganpati devotee, it could be Ganpati says me, reaches me. For a Christian, it could be Jesus. For a Muslim, it could be Allah. But it is that consciousness, that Brahman. It could be Mother Goddess. If, you know, we just recently celebrated Navratri. Somebody who is a Saraswati devotee or a Durga devotee says she is the supreme, and that is fine. So that me is this, and this consciousness is the same in all. And that is one thing very important to remember, because people get so fanatic that my religion or my God alone. In India, sometimes people, you know, who are Vaishnavites will curse Shiva, thinking that, oh, Vishnu will be happy. You know, foolish things like that. And then even among the different, like among Muslims, you know, Shias are killing Sunnis. You know, I don't know for what. I have no idea. You know what? Or Catholics are killing Protestants. You know, we saw that in Ireland. So it is because of wrong understanding. But what Vedanta teaches us, that there is one consciousness everywhere, all pervading, is there in all plants, animals, birds, fish, and every cell of my body is pervaded by that. Kan kan mein Bhagwan. So when every cell of my body is that, then how can I be separate from that? How can I be separate from God when every cell in my body is pervaded by Him? Every word of my that is coming out of my mouth is inspired by that the Lord. Then you can never be away from that. Then that is called the understanding that I am that consciousness. I am. And people misunderstand that. You know, in Vedanta they say Tatvamasi, that thou art, that thou art. You are that. You say, I am that? Yes. Aham Brahmasmi, I am Brahman. But people misunderstand that by thinking I am God and or you are all God. And that is the biggest misunderstanding of Vedanta. They say, I am God. And people either become arrogant or they don't trust Vedanta. They say, how can I be God? It's not to be translated as Aham Brahmasmi does not mean I am God. Take that out of your mind. And Tatvamasi does not mean you all are God. No. We are all that one all-pervading consciousness who at this moment is occupying this body, and I have been given the name of Anil or Satish or Diana. This is the name I have been given, this body, male or female, and white or black or short or tall. So this body, mind and intellect is my equipment. I am that consciousness, but I am not God. I cannot create. God created the world. What can I create? Only confusion. What else can I create? Nothing else. So, what one has to understand that there is one totality that is everywhere, that is in everything, and that is my higher nature. I am at this moment identified. That's why I read it somewhere very beautifully. It says, you are not human beings undergoing a spiritual experience. You are not human beings undergoing a spiritual experience. You are spiritual beings undergoing a human experience. See, it's such an important, beautiful line. He says, you are all spiritual beings, and at this moment you are occupying this body, but never forget that I am a spiritual being. I am that spirit. I am, that's why, you know, I am that spirit. That's why Jesus said, the Father in heaven and I are one. That means I am that. He did not say that I am the Father in heaven and I created this universe. He never says that anywhere. Jesus was so humble, so modest. He said that Father and heaven and I are not separate. So while I am working in the world, I have to always remember that I am a limited individual. I am not limitless. I am not all powerful like God. And I work with God's inspiration, keeping his ideas in mind, keeping the ideas of the Bhagavad Gita, getting inspiration from saints, continue to work, and all the time remember that I have forgotten. We have forgotten who we really are. We truly are that spirit. And always remember that. And what is the benefit of remembering that? We will do that a little more in the next. But such a person then can go through life without getting disturbed. And he comes closer to the truth, because the truth, our true nature, is Om Brahman, the consciousness. That is what we are. And so the more you stay with that idea that I am that, I am that, I am that, but I am not God. I am not the creator of this universe. I did not, but my higher nature is that. And I have to all the time abide in my higher nature and function in my lower nature, but remembering my higher nature. That is very, very important. Always stay in the Mundak Upanishad. They have a beautiful story. Every Upanishad starts with a story where they have two birds. There is a lower bird and there is a higher bird. The lower bird is eating, you know, all the fruits in the tree. And when he gets a sweet fruit, he gets very happy. When he gets a sour fruit, he gets very miserable. But the higher bird is just watching, not doing anything. And then when the lower bird gets a sweet fruit, he's very happy. When he gets a miserable sour fruit, then he goes crying to the higher bird, oh, you need to help me. Look, I have, that is how our condition is. We have the spirit in us, that is whom we should identify with the higher bird, and function in the world. And remember, there will be sweet fruits and sour fruits. Do not be perturbed, because you are not the lower bird, you are that higher bird. So that understanding comes, and then you wake up. So realization is not that suddenly, you know, you have a halo and a light shining, and you know, and then you're walking around and the whole, you know, place is illumined. It's not like that. It's just a shift of understanding. You wake up to your true nature. There is nothing, is not realization. Suddenly, you know, Bhagawan will appear and with a big light, and he will say, ask what you want. Tathastu, you know, nothing like that happens. In the Puranas, they talk about it. Maybe it may have happened, you know, for some seekers who wanted it. If you want God to appear, he will. But a wise person knows that the God in me is, that is my true nature. And that's what Dhruva, that's what Prahlad, all of them knew, that my Vishnu is not only outside, but he is within me as life, as consciousness. So it is just a waking up. It's not a change in your situation. And that is the beautiful, that's why he says, Mad Bhavam So Adhigachati. He comes to me, becomes one with me. That is the, some very, very powerful verse, needs a lot of thinking. You know, please go home and, as I said, read the book, think about it again. You can listen to these talks again on internet. You go to firstpower.info. I think Tony will be putting them on by about Thursday. So the previous talks, if you want to listen, just go firstpower.info and then just click on talks by Dr. Anil Mehta and you will get them. Or you can, some people take picture on their iPhone. You can do that and then that. So whatever, the idea is to remember these thoughts again and again, because one time listening, I personally, for myself, if I listen to something one time, by the time I leave the room, I forget it. It's only by repeated listening and thinking that these ideas become yours. It's like anything else, you know, when you learned A, B, C, D, E, F, G. First time your mother told you, you don't learn it. Or when we tell our children, you tell them again and again, A, then B, then C. So we are like that. Repeated listening is very important. Thank you. Any comments? Any discussion on this? Yes. I think with practice, in the beginning you won't know it. In the beginning you will be just caught in it. But as you act in the world, as you function, as you become aware that my gunas are working, and then also what will happen is the kind of reaction that you have. If your reaction after doing that action is pure, peaceful, silent, then you know that it is inspired by higher. But if my reaction to that is agitation or anger or disturbance, or, you know, then you know that it was a rajasic action. But if it is pure, peaceful, then you know that it is pure. So A, by practice, and B, by the reaction. That's why Gurudev says that sin is not in the action, it is in the reaction. Swami Chinmayananda says that. It's not the activity, but the residue it leaves in your mind. Like the same action, like, you know, cutting somebody's stomach and the person bleeds to death. Now, it could be done by a murderer trying to steal his wallet, or it could be done by a surgeon. Somebody's, you know, has come with a big accident and he's bleeding inside, and he cuts his stomach and tries to save him, and he can't. He bleeds to death. Now, the same action has been done by two individuals, and the end result was the same. The person died. But the reaction is different. While a criminal, you know, he knows that I'll go to jail, he hides it. And the surgeon says, look, he goes to the wife and says, I tried my best. He was too sick. And in his mind, he's, you know, I mean, he feels bad, of course, that he couldn't save that. But at least there is no guilt, or there is no negative, you know, reaction in that. So I think those two things. But by constant practice, and that's why meditation is very important. Regular meditation helps you to become a witness of the mind and know what state my mind is in. That's a nice question. Thank you. Aham Brahmasmi means I am Brahman. Soham means that I am. That I am. I am that. So it's the same thing. Soham means I am that, and Aham Brahmasmi means I am Brahman. So he just explains what is that. So there's no difference. It's just the translation is different, but the end meaning is the same. Sa means that, Aham means I am. And Aham Brahmasmi, Asmi means I am Brahman. No, not I am God. There's a difference. I am Brahman. There's a difference, but actually all of us are Brahman. Because Brahman alone is playing through all of us. We are all nothing but. But we are not God. There's a Brahman and God is different. Though we translate it as the same. God is the creator, sustainer and destroyer of the universe called Ishvara. Brahman, when it functions through the total Maya, becomes God, becomes Ishvara, becomes the creator of the universe. And when it functions through the individual vasanas, becomes you and me. So that one consciousness playing through the total Maya becomes God, right? And that one consciousness playing through the individual vasanas becomes you and me. So I am that individuality, but my essential nature is Brahman. I am Brahman playing through this individual, but I am still a limited individual. I am not God. But I am Brahman, I am that consciousness, that spirit, what Christ calls the Holy Spirit. You know, he says the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. So the Holy Spirit is that total consciousness, which at this moment is functioning through me. And I have to constantly remember that. But a person who realizes the truth, who realizes, like Jesus or Buddha or Shankaracharya or Swami Chinmayananda, they will never say, I am God. They will never say. Their followers make worship them. Like we say, Bhagwan Shankaracharya, Bhagwan Raman Maharishi. We worship them because they have become one with God. But a person will never say, I am God. If somebody says that, then that person should not be followed. You have to understand the difference between Brahman and God. Even though it's Brahman functioning through the total Maya, takes on the role of God. I don't know if that makes it clear or not. So when I say I am Brahman, does not mean I am God. I am that spirit. I am that consciousness functioning through this body. I am a spiritual being functioning in this body, but I am a limited individual. I am not God. The more you identify, become one with that spirit, ultimately, when that I disappears, then he alone remains. And that is called realization, when that ego disappears. As long as the ego is there, I will remain in ignorance. I have spent a lot of time explaining it because it's a difficult concept. It's a very, very, very subtle difference. And it can cause a lot of confusion. So I'm glad you asked that because I myself took me a while. Yes, sure. Yeah, you know, I think that's an excellent question. I meant to explain that. Thank you for asking. Forgive does not mean you become a doormat and let anybody and everybody walk over you. When there is an opportunity to correct or help somebody or fix it, definitely, like your child is doing something wrong or somebody has hurt you, you can tell that person nicely, look, it was not right. I didn't like what you said. But inside, there should not be any resentment. There should not be any anger, because if you have that, and he already said something and went away, and 5 years ago he said it, he's even forgotten, but if I'm still holding on to that inner hurt or anger, or then that's what we mean by forgive. But yes, you have to do your duty and where it is required, and you have to take a stand, and somebody is doing wrong, like, you know, if you have to correct somebody or somebody is hurting somebody, if you can stop him, you should stop. Forgive does not mean that you allow any and all bad things to happen. You know, I mean, even though Mahatma Gandhi preached nonviolence, but he did not say that nonviolence does not mean you accept whatever the British are doing. So it does not mean becoming a passive instrument and just a worthless, you know, doormat. No, I think that's a very good point. Thank you. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinah, Sarve Santu Niramaya, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Makaschid Dukha Bhavet. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namah. Harihi Om.
Thank you so much.